This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the art of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
My guest this week is Jennifer McClure. Jennifer's a keynote speaker, influencer, and executive coach. She's also the CEO of Unbridled Talent and the Chief Excitement Officer of Disrupt HR. Jennifer has over 25 years of experience leading HR and talent acquisition efforts, studying industry best practices, and partnering with senior executives to improve their skills and increase their impact. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here to chat with you today.
So Jennifer, I'm really excited to chat with you today. And quite honestly, I could spend probably the entire podcast talking with you about your favorite quote from Zig Ziglar. You can have everything in life you want if you will just help other people get what they want.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's fantastic. So tell me why it's your favorite.
Because I think throughout my career, especially the last half of it, where I've been in executive recruiting and I spent time working with senior executives in transition, helping them find their new roles and opportunities, and then, you know, more so as a coach and advisor to companies and leaders now, I just see so many people that are trying so hard to do all the right things, but the people that I see that are the most successful or that land the quickest or get to their ideal opportunity are the people that really focus on helping others. So it's kind of like when you take that focus off of what you want and you focus on what others want, call it karma, call it Zig Ziglar's prophecy, whatever we want to call it. Mm-hmm. I think it just comes back to you. It's when you're helping people, people view you better, or, you know, maybe more positively. You're putting yourself in the position of being an expert, you know, in a lot of cases when you're sharing resources or connecting people. So it's just a great way to think about whether it's career growth or just life in general. Just help other people. And I think what you get comes back to you.
I guess that's why it really resonated with me too, because I'm from that same school of thought too. You know, I as I was learning about your background and whatnot, I always find this interesting when I'm speaking with other human resources professionals of how they got into this field. Because during the time that you were graduating from the university, as was I, it really wasn't talked about as a career option. So, Jennifer, tell us a little bit about your upbringing, your college days, and how you stumbled into HR.
I kind of always, I think my whole life has been a series of divine interventions. I'm not sure, because I look back and I had a job. I grew up on a farm out in the middle of nowhere, so didn't even really, you know, I didn't live in a neighborhood or have friends or anything like that. I played with horses and cows and stuff like that. And then when I got my first job at 16, once I could drive, it was in a country grocery store. And so the store manager hired me. And then after, you know, I was in high school, my mom had stayed home with us my whole life up until the point I was a junior in high school. And she got a job at a bank as bank teller. And so in the summers, I started working at the bank filing checks. Back in the day when the actual people wrote actual checks and then they came to the bank and someone actually sorted them and counted them and put them in an envelope and sent them to you. That was me over the summers. So again, I didn't even really get an interaction with a human resources or personnel, what it was called back then, professional. So when I went to college, my junior year, my advisor said, it's time to pick a major. And I don't know what struck me, but I said personnel, because there, again, was not human resources at the time.
Right.
And he said, well, we don't have a degree in personnel. We don't even actually have any classes in it. So just get a business management degree and join the American Society for Personnel Administrators, which is what SHRM used to be called, the student chapter. And that's where it kind of started. And I think, you know, I tell people, one of my things I tell in my keynotes is I was a millennial before millennials were cool, before they were a thing. I was the original, maybe, probably not.
You're the pioneer.
I think I saw personnel as being a place in the organization that wasn't siloed, in the sense that if I'm the marketing director, I'm responsible for marketing and I focus on marketing. I felt like human resources was responsible for everybody. And so I wanted the most responsibility and the most opportunity to have influence and impact as I could. So if I can't be the CEO right out of the gate, what was the position where I could have the opportunity to interact with every employee in the organization. That was where that quick decision came from. And looking back, I'm really glad that I made that decision because I'd still believe that today. I think human resources is the place, or the people side of the business, you know, recruiting can be in that function as well. You do have responsibility for all the employees. You know, you're administering policies or benefits or doing employee relations or recruiting throughout the organization. I mean, the larger the organization or the longer you get in your career, maybe you begin to specialize. But at least initially, if you're a generalist, you have the opportunity to see everything. And I think that's great.
Well, I think then that kind of gets back to what you said at the beginning about the Zig Ziglar quote about helping other people. And it's certainly evident in your DNA that that's how you're wired, and probably the direction that you got led into your divine intervention towards the human resources career. I have to laugh about your bank teller story. I worked for a bank when I was in college, and that's when the ATMs came out. And we were training people on how to use the ATMs, and to bribe them to use it, we would give them coupons to go get a free ice cream at Baskin Robbins, which was quite enticing in the summer of Phoenix,
Bring
Arizona.
Bring back those days, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Now my bank just charges me a fee every month because I don't use the ATM. I'm like,
isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the other things that I was learning again about you, I was really taken, I've said this to somebody else, that and you in particular are really quite the Renaissance woman. You talk about your career in HR, how you got into HR. I know you worked in a small manufacturing plant in Georgia to kick it off. But then you shifted that career in HR to working in executive recruiting. And mm-hmm. since that's my passion, I'm always interested to understand what lured people into that exciting world of executive search. So what lured you, Jennifer, to executive search?
I was not lured. I was pushed. I was kicking and screaming. I had worked in human resources, like I said, as a generalist, even in executive roles, you know, having responsibility for all of the people functions, had always done recruiting, you know, from the very beginning, whether that was hourly factory workers or the janitor or the painter, all the way up to, you know, C-suite roles in the HR positions that I'd had. In the company that I worked for in my last corporate role, I didn't know it when I started because, again, I didn't even think, I'm a country girl, I didn't even think to ask the question about privately held versus publicly held and what that meant. And I guess, well, I mean, I worked for, my first company was a Kroger company, but I didn't think about that being public. And then the second company I worked for was private, and I didn't see the difference. So when I accepted the role as the VP of HR at this company, didn't ask any questions. I'm sure I was told about the ownership. It was owned by, I call them local rich people here in Cincinnati, iconic brand playing cards, largest playing card manufacturer in the world. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks into that job, the CEO kept talking about when we sell the company. And I was like, what? I don't know much, but usually selling the company means the executives get kicked out on the street. And he was like, no, that's why we're here. We're here to build the enterprise value of the organization up so that we can sell the company to the right people, because the owners had bought the brand because it was about to go bankrupt and they wanted to steward the brand and keep a, you know, 100 plus year old brand alive in Cincinnati. So I learned a thing, and our goal was to sell the company in 5 years, and we sold it in 2.5. And then I stayed a little bit longer than I should have. I volunteered to exit, and the CEO asked me to stay on and help the new CEO get his footing. That turned into a really tumultuous year. So after a while, we parted ways. It was his idea. It was my idea every day to leave, and I kept telling him that and making his life miserable. So there's, you know, a lot more to the story about how I went to the dark side of employment. And then one day I decided, literally on a Friday afternoon driving home, that I was the absolute worst employee, that I was the one that I would advise everybody not to act like, that I was doing all the wrong things, that I was choosing to stay, obviously, because I hadn't left. And if I was going to choose to stay, I really needed to come to Jesus and make his life much easier and get on board with where he was taking the company. So that was a Friday. And on Monday, I came in to tell my team how excited I was that I had had this epiphany, and they were excited because they had seen me go to the dark side. And I called a meeting of my team, my directors, to come in on Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. to kind of talk about it. It was October, our next year, you know, plans for the next year, because HR was back. Life was going to be good. Mm-hmm. And at 10 o'clock the next morning, they're all sitting in my office, you know, excited around the table and getting ready to have this planning meeting. And my phone rings and it's the CEO. And he calls me and says, could you come to my office? And that was a sentence that was said quite a bit, because we were in kind of a situation where some people were being invited to leave on the regular.
Yep, yep.
Because, you know, things weren't going the right way. And so I was like, oh, it's somebody on the list. It's their time and I need to go, you know, give the benefits talk and all that. And I walked in his office and the CEO that had hired me was also in there and I knew. So it was my turn to exit. And for like, you know, half a day, I was hurt and disappointed. And then I realized it was the absolute probably best thing that ever happened to me, because I was too comfortable to leave a situation that was very uncomfortable, if that makes sense. You know, the pay was good, the benefits were good, and I was just stuck. And so I wasn't choosing what should have been the right decision for me to leave. So he made the choice for me. And I ultimately engaged a career coach, which again, I'd never heard of a career coach, and just kind of serendipitously, divine intervention, email from a recruiting firm landed in my inbox from somebody in my Sunday school class at church. And they'd never sent, it was a recruiting email for a CFO, which made no sense, or CIO, made no sense. The person decided to forward it to everyone in the Sunday school class. And I said, I've never heard of this recruiting firm and they're in Cincinnati. And I thought I knew all the recruiters. So I went to their website. They had a career coach that worked in their office. You know, he didn't place people with through their, you know, necessarily their roles, but I was intrigued by the idea. And I called the CEO up and I said, hey, you know, I have outplacement in my employment contract, but I'd rather work with a career coach and it'll be cheaper. And he was like, whatever you need, fine. And so I started working with this career coach. And again, I am an introvert, which always tends to shock people. I'm not sure why. And was not a networker by any stretch of the means. So I didn't even go to like the local professional association meetings. I was just head down. It was a turnaround situation. Just really was burnt out and tired. And so when I started working with him, the first thing he said was that I need to put together a marketing plan to go out to be able to talk to people, to network. And I was like, marketing plan? Well, okay. And his process was to pick three areas of interest. And so I was kind of thinking that I would start my own business. Not, you know, would have been a disaster. I'm so glad that people didn't encourage me to do that, because I had really no idea what I would sell or what I just figured I would. 20 years in, it's time. Start your own business, you know, hang that shingle. And he said, well, we can pick choosing starting your own business as one. He said, you've obviously got a background in HR. And he said, for the third one, you've done a lot of recruiting. So why not recruiting? I was like, sure, but I hate recruiters. I actually hate recruiters because every time someone calls me, you know, particularly the contingent search folks, I feel like they're just trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. They don't know my business. They just saw the job posting online and flooded my inbox and my mailbox with their perfect candidates. And he was like, Jennifer, just, you know, go out and talk to people and recruiting may or may not come up. So, just stop being so hard to get along with. So I went out and I, you know, I had to get on the remedial plan. He had to give me some names of people to start with because I claimed I didn't know anybody. And I started this networking process where the goal was to really, since I wasn't looking for a job, I was kind of exploring what was next. I think it was very helpful because I am very curious and I am a pretty good interviewer, I believe. And so if I could get someone to meet with me, I'd asked for 20 minutes of their time. My goal was to really ask about them. Back to that kind of not focusing on me, maybe focusing on others. Tell me about your career. Tell me about how you, you know, got to starting your own business, or tell me how you got into HR leadership, or tell me how you got into executive search. And so people shared their stories with me, and that was building rapport. And then I would ask, you know, at the end, not for a job or not to review my resume, which I think is the mistake a lot of people make in transition, but I'd just ask if there were additional people in their network like them that they'd suggest that I meet with. And so the goal became to get three names, to build enough rapport and trust to get them to trust me with three names of people from their network that then I could use their name to continue the process. So I did that for about a month, and it was amazing to me, again, when I would share a little bit about what I was looking for, maybe considering starting my own business. As I said, people were kind and helpful and frank and said, Jennifer, please don't start your own business. You're not ready. You've never done any kind of business development. You, by your own admission, are not a networker. You don't have a network, and you don't know how to sell anything, and you don't know what you would offer. So why don't you take an interim step and maybe start in recruiting? And I was gave them my speech about not liking recruiters.
And they're, but you're like, going to be a different one.
And I said, you know, they just are transactional. They call and they just want to put, you know, like set square pegs in round holes. And again, really wise people looked at me and said, but what if you found a recruiting firm that wasn't like that, that you could work for? And I said, is there one? Is there such a thing? And they said, well, you said you're doing career coaching through Centennial Inc. Centennial Inc. is actually a recruiting firm that is very relationship focused. They're not transactional. And I was like, tell me more. Mm-hmm. So people suggested it to me actually as a step to see if I was cut out to do my own thing and to learn the business development relationship building, because I wasn't a cold caller. I've probably made maybe 2 cold calls in my career. You know, I can't dial that number. And I know a lot of, you know, the best recruiters are really good at it. But that was not me. So I wanted to find a way to be successful at it through building relationships. And Mike Sipple Sr. at Centennial Inc. here in Cincinnati is and was known as a relationship guy. And he is also a wise, wise man. And so when I went to him and I said, people are telling me that I should maybe look into executive search, and they're also recommending that I should talk to you. And he was willing to give me a chance, as he is with a lot of people. He explains what's involved. You know, it's 100% commission, and you have to build your own, you know, in their small family-owned firm, you did the full cycle, you know, so you mm-hmm. develop your own business, you deliver your own business, you do all the things. And so he really laid out for me kind of how long it would take me to potentially even make money, because I was going to be spending a lot of time on building relationships for several months that would then potentially turn into search opportunities. And just such a wise, wise man. And I took it on as an, as you can see, maybe a little bit, I'm very competitive. So it was kind of like a challenge. He said, typically HR people don't succeed in executive search mm-hmm. because you're used to holding the cards. And he said, we don't hold the cards. And I was like, well, challenge accepted. So I think it was great advice from leaders that I went out and talked with that both steered me away from what I know would have been a business failure if I had started a business, because I'm still learning business development and things like that. But I'm so grateful that I was steered back to work again with a type of process that I could get on board with, really being more of a business advisor. And I know there are all kinds of different models in the search business, but I liked having a handful of clients that I maybe did multiple senior level searches with over the year, but that they also would call me and ask me. It was kind of a consultative role too. So it was very, it was just a perfect opportunity, and I'm grateful to have had it.
It's interesting. Your story is really resonating with me because it's similar to mine. You know, people ask me how, you know, why I started Duffy Group. And quite frankly, it was because I needed a job. I didn't have the opportunity to have outplacement, but the people that I was working for relocated to the Bay Area. And so, yeah, you have to just sort of get out there and start figuring out what that network is, which, you know, I've been listening to your podcast, Impact Makers, and I really have enjoyed it. And there was an episode that I was listening to recently on intentional networking strategies. And I have 2 children, both of whom I raised on the mantra, it's not what you know, but it's who you know.
Absolutely.
And they've and they've done a very good job at their early professional days to start building that network. You really do talk a lot about that investment in building that network, and I'm sure that's a lot of what you are working on with your clients as you're coaching them and helping them into transition. And you shared some of the advice that you got as you were starting this, do you have a marketing plan, identifying the three areas of interest. What's the advice that you consistently share with your clients as they, are sitting in that same seat that you were those years ago?
I am an advice giver. You want unsolicited advice? I'm here for you. tell me your problems. I got solutions, even if you didn't ask.
It's a good news, bad news, right?
Well, no, as a coach that I learned in my coaching training, actually, I thought I'd been a great coach all of my years being in HR because people would come to me, with their problems, their woes or whatever. Or I had helped somebody that maybe had not sought me out, but I helped them. I learned very quickly that I was giving advice. I was not coaching, because coaching is really working with the person to draw out of them what the right solution is, which involves a lot of listening and a lot of questions. It very rarely, if ever, involves the coach giving solutions. So I, as a coach, have to fight that urge every time with clients because... And then I am so happy when I am successful at fighting that urge, when they come to a solution that not only do they bring through from within or realize or learn, but then they own it. It's like me telling my story about what I learned through my coaching process and networking. I feel that in my bones because I experienced it and I saw the results. So for leaders that can do that same kind of learning for themselves, they're going to own it and it's going to sink in. Versus if I tell you the right way to do something, you may or may not agree with me. You may do it begrudgingly. There's a lot of reasons why my solution, actually, I'm not in your shoes. So that might not be the best solution. So I think, in terms of what I tell people, particularly, I don't do career coaching now, but I still get, a call from someone that just like me, somebody knew me and gave them my name and said it was okay for them to call me. So I'm going to be helpful to that person. It's really a challenge for people, and it was for me in the beginning when I was in transition as well, to think about narrowing in their choices. And now as a business owner, you hear it all the time, the riches are in the niches, and even when I went into executive search, Mike Senior said, Jennifer, if you specialize like in HR executive search, you'll make more money because you'll build a reputation as the person for HR executive searches. He said, but if you want to generalize and do, different things, you won't make as much money, but I'll leave that up to you. And because I'd always done a variety of searches, I chose to generalize and still try to make good money. But that riches are in the niches. And I think for leaders or people in transition, that is a hard pill to swallow because you hear it all the time. I want to be open to opportunities. Well, you can be open to opportunities, but you are going to get further faster if you help people out by, for example, I would say, what are three target companies that you're interested in? Well, I want to keep my opportunities open. I'm really open to anything. No, pick three companies that you would ideally want to work at. And here in Cincinnati, when I was helping senior level executives in search, almost always it would be Procter & Gamble, Luxottica, and Ethicon, a Johnson & Johnson company. At the time, they were kind of the premier employers. Okay. Well, at the time, P&G didn't do a lot of hiring of external people. It was pretty much entry-level hiring. I think they've expanded that over the last few years. But I know you're probably not going to get hired as a mid-career executive at P&G. I also know that, Luxottica was a popular place and not everybody was going to get hired there. But if they told me P&G, Luxottica, and Ethicon, I could say, tell me more about why you would be interested in working at Procter & Gamble. Well, classic branding company, leading brands, good leadership, strong reputation. And I was like, interesting. Would you maybe consider working at Cal Brands, which is also in Cincinnati, has leading brands, et cetera. Oh, I hadn't thought about them. So, when you narrow in, I always try to get people to understand that doesn't restrict the focus. That opens my mind as to what else I can put before you that may be similar. But if you come in with, I'm open to opportunities, my mind is just as open as yours. So I'm not able to think about potential places as easily or people that you need to connect with. But if you come in and you say, I'm targeting a brand manager role at Procter & Gamble, I can say, well, you know, may or may not be able to help you get into Procter & Gamble, but I have some contacts in brand management at A, B, C, and D companies, you know? So that I think is advice that it's until you're faced with that situation of it being in need, you think you want to go out and be wide open to the world when the reality is you'll get more opportunities put in front of you if you narrow your focus. Hard to believe, but true.
No, I would, again, agree with you because I receive, probably like you, so many requests to go out for a cup of coffee or a quick call to network. And if people don't know their story, it's exhausting.
And they're like, I'm looking for a job. Here's my resume. What do you have for me?
Yeah, exactly. Can't you peddle this for me? And that's where that, you know, that whole transactional relationship comes into play that you talked about earlier. But, you know, as you told your story, as you were working with the search firm and that they had a colleague in their organization that did executive coaching, we have that here at Duffy Group too, a gentleman by the name of Gary Rashan. And he does a fantastic job of helping people to be able to tell that story. And I've just watched people go from feeling so defeated out there because they're sending their resume, they're posting on LinkedIn, whatever they're doing, and they're not getting any calls back. And it's because they're not succinct with that story, like you say.
I always tell people the worst phrase that can come out of your mouth is transferable skills. Mm-hmm. Oh, you worked in accounting your whole entire career, but you like to work over in HR now because you're good with people and you have transferable skills. No,
right.
That's not the way it works. Right. If you want to transition from accounting to HR, then go out, volunteer in an HR professional association, build your network of HR professionals, find a way, exactly what you're saying, to tell your story in a way. I mean, I got my first job in personnel at the time. I was a bank auditor because I got married and moved right away to the highest unemployment county in the state of Georgia. Nobody was hiring, particularly entry-level HR people. Mm-hmm. And so I took a job as a bank auditor, which you couldn't pick a worse job for me for, in terms of what I want to do in life.
But not very helpful, but it is an introvert, right?
Yeah, well, it was like traveling around to all these branches and surprising people, which everybody hated you because you walk in and like ruin their day for 3 or 4 days. But part of being a bank auditor was when we'd go into these branch offices of the banks, somebody got assigned to audit the personnel files. And I would always pick that. And so when I did get the opportunity to interview for a personnel manager job, you can better believe that I sold the heck out of how much time I did with HR compliance. You know, you can't lie, but you can tell a story. And I got hired over some people that were much more experienced. And I think it was because I was able to sell my experience as HR related experience without coming in there and saying, oh, I have this business management degree. I want to work in personnel. I think I'd be really good at it. And I've got a lot of transferable skills. No, I audited personnel files. I interviewed HR leaders. You know, I've got to be able to tell them what skills I bring to the table and not just couch it as general skills. Mm-hmm. That's a little rant for you there. That's my trigger word phrase, transferable skills.
Love it. Love it. Well, hang on, Jennifer. We have to take a break. But coming up in the second part of my chat with Jennifer McClure, the CEO of Unbridled Talent and Chief Excitement Officer of Disrupt HR, Jennifer shares some of the best ways to network online.
There's a whole side to relationship building that can be done by being a good student. Pick somebody that you want to get to know better. If they're sharing content online, or if they have a newsletter, or if they're on a social network, just engage with them there and find ways back to Zig. You know, find ways to help them.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.